Good afternoon. As you know, we had a very useful bilateral meeting with Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard in Queensland on the weekend. At the heart of our agenda was a package of measures to recognise the 30th anniversary of CER. CER is widely recognised as one of the most far-reaching and successful trade agreements. CER has been a key driver of competitiveness in Australia and New Zealand, contributing to our economic growth and creating jobs on both sides of the Tasman. And we're not standing still. One of the four economic measures we announced on the weekend was aimed at limiting how much New Zealand and Australian consumers pay to use their mobile phones in each other's countries. There is no reason for people to pay astronomical cell phone bills on returning from holiday on the other side of the Tasman. It's fair to say that a clear signal of government intentions is in this area, has seen telecommunications companies get the message. Costs for New Zealanders have dropped substantially since it was first mooted, but regulatory controls may be applied. My announcement on the weekend with Prime Minister Gillard makes it clear that we are serious about keeping these charges reasonable. Prime Minister Gillard and I also announced that our countries would contribute $3 million in matched funding over the next 2 years to support the identification of a potential vaccine for rheumatic fever. In New Zealand, rheumatic heart disease, which stems from rheumatic fever, kills about 150 people a year, and hospitalisation costs for rheumatic fever and heart disease run at around about $12 million. It is a disease that particularly afflicts Māori and Pacific people, and both Australian and New Zealand chief science advisors have confidence we can make progress towards a vaccine. You'll also know that we announced that New Zealand's agreement to take 150 asylum seekers from the Australian system each year. New Zealand has long acknowledged that boat people are a regional problem. In other words, they are our problem as well as Australia's. I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's only a matter of time until we have mass arrival here in New Zealand. Australia is putting huge resources into stopping these boats, some of which have expressly stated they are en route to New Zealand. Australia's efforts are directly benefiting New Zealand. Let me also repeat that these 150 refugees from the Australian system are not an addition to the 750 refugees we take from our current UNHCR quota. They are part of that quota. And they're not queue jumpers, they have to be genuine refugees assessed under the UNHCR criteria and will have spent as much time in the system as refugees who come from other sources that we take people from. They gain no advantage, ultimately we just determine who we take and who we don't. We cannot just turn back these boats once they're in our waters, they become our responsibilities under our current laws. That is why we need regional cooperation and why we must do our part to support the preventive work Australia is doing. We cannot bury our heads in the sand and hope for the best. The problem exists and we need to work together to work out how to resolve it. Just in terms of ministerial activity, this week I'm in the House tomorrow and Wednesday, Auckland on Thursday and Hamilton on Friday. In the House this week is the government's intention to continue the debate on the Prime Minister's statement and progress the Corrections Amendment Bill and the Privacy Information Sharing Bill. Dr. the Right Honourable Lockwood Smith's valedictory speech will be on Wednesday at 5:30, and of course this week will be the start of the new speaker.
You say that they're not queue jumpers. Why is that?
Because of the no advantage rule that operates, what effectively happens is an assessment is made of how long someone would likely be in a camp from one of the other sources that we take people from, Africa or Asia and the likes, and that's the same process that would apply if they're in Manus or PNG or in the Australian system.
Why is New Zealand doing this? I mean, what's in it for us? Have you been promised something
for Julian? No, it's important to understand. I wanted to do this. I think it's the right thing to do, but there's a few reasons why. Firstly, there's no cost to New Zealand, and in some sense, there's no difference for New Zealand, in the sense that we could be reasonably ambivalent about where we take people. We're just taking 750 people a year. As long as they're genuine refugees, that's the first criteria. There is an advantage, though, I think, from New Zealand's point of view, of sourcing 150 of that 750 from the Australian system, and that is you can't turn these boats back. That's when we went through the extensive process of looking at potential law changes, all of which are sort of still on the cards. One thing the legal advice tells you is there's very little you can do. You can't stop these boats sailing into our water. You can't take inhumane, New Zealand wouldn't take inhumane action. So in the end, once a boat hits your water, you have to deal with that situation. So the best defence mechanism is stopping and disrupting the boats before they leave. So the Australians have huge amounts of resources dedicated towards that, and it's been quite a successful effort. So we can piggyback up on the back of that. We just don't have the resources dedicated to that. So that's the first thing that I think makes a big difference. Secondly, you know, my view is that we are helping our mates, and that's useful, but in return for that, we are not only getting that capacity to have all of that information. Secondly, the Australians, if they have a boat that turns up that's en route to New Zealand, will do everything they can to stop it. Now, there's quite a, I don't know how much information was released on the Duma and other boats that look to come to New Zealand, but there have been cases where the Australians have considered whether they would help shepherd a boat across the Tasman. People were absolutely adamant to do that. Well, again, you know, we can't stop that. This helps that part of the process.
The coalition criticised this deal in Australia. If there's a change of government in Australia later in the year, do you think this deal will stick?
Well, it's entirely up to them. If they don't want us to take people out of the Australian system, they're more than welcome to. But yeah, I'd be pretty comfortable in betting that there'll be no change.
Some people might say that New Zealand's essentially endorsing or legitimising the apparently appalling conditions in this offshore detention center.
Well, for a start off, we've raised that issue with the Australian Prime Minister. She is extremely confident that the camps that are operating within the Australian system meet the world's standard for what is expected for a refugee camp. So they reject the proposition that these are not up to international standard.
But they've been criticised by both the UNHCR and Amnesty International.
Well, that's the view of the Australian government, is that they meet the international standard and that's their expectation.
I'm concerned they're sending a wrong Australian territory.
Sorry.
Does within the Australian system in that state mean in Australian territory?
Correct. Some of them are. In fact, the vast bulk are in the Australian territory because there's only limited numbers in PNG and Manus. Anyway, we're not starting until 2014 and people are likely to be in those camps for a reasonable period of time.
You've mentioned that Australia might actually process any mass arrival in New Zealand.
Correct.
That might be sent back, and you'll need legislation to do that.
Yep.
So, are you going to approach other political parties to get that done?
If we decide to go there. So basically, as part of the original, when we were looking at this proposal, one of the things I liked about the proposal was saying, okay, if we got a number of ships coming to New Zealand, how would we handle that? And at the moment, the obvious place is the Maunganui Detention Centre, but that's not fit for, you know, long-term issues because we're dealing with other refugees that are coming. So one of the ideas I had was, well, maybe we can actually use their offshore processing centres, and that will act as the deterrent that some people argue it might for Australia. The legal advice I got was that is not possible as the legislation currently stands in New Zealand, so we would need to change the legislation. So as part of this agreement, the Foreign Minister has been speaking to the Australian Foreign Minister, and I've certainly raised this issue with Julia Gillard, that we might want to go down that route, but if we did want to, A, we'd have to pass legislation, and B, we probably would have discussions with other parties. It's not something I'm planning to do today, but it's something we could do.
So you and are they receptive for that?
Yep, they understand that.
Prime Minister, aren't you concerned that you may be sending a wrong signal to people traffickers and all of that?
No, I mean, look, in the end, what I think you all have to accept is you've got desperate people doing desperate things when they get on these boats. I mean, it's well documented that people are losing their lives, and we can, you know, can identify the ones where there is a tragedy, you know, close to Australian waters. But there are probably many that lose their lives that we're just not aware of, and they happen far out to sea. So you've got desperate people doing desperate things. I don't think you're going to stop that easily, even with the offshore processing units and the likes. In the end, you've got to find a way of dealing with it. So Australia is taking, as I think Ian said, I think it's 20,000 refugees a year. We're taking 750. The vast bulk of what Australia's taking now will be through its own centres.
So when you're discussing water is sufficient for Australia is receptive to possibly one day doing our offshore.
Correct, if necessary, yes.
So we would send, if a boat did arrive, we would send them to Papua New Guinea or Nauru.
Well, that's a possibility, and that's what's on the table if we want to go and explore that. It would have to be driven by New Zealand to go and change our legislation and negotiate that potentially with those parties, but yes, that's possible.
So you'd be happy, as Prime Minister, to see these people processed up in those camps?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm not happy if a boat comes to New Zealand. I'm just reacting to the stream of advice that I constantly get. And, yeah, I accept the view that some people hold, that, you know, that's not likely or easy to come to New Zealand. But then that was exactly the same proposition that the Canadians used to talk about till the boat came back.
So why don't we build our own detention
centre and do it? Well, we are in the process, I don't know if we publicly announced it, but we're in the process of spending a lot of money at Mangere to upgrade it. But even then, that would be a very costly way of doing it. Now, we might have to do that in years to come if we decided not to embark on a change in legislation and we did see lots of boats coming to New Zealand. We'd have to work out how to deal with all that. And that was part of the process of review that was undertaken and part of the legislation that we were looking to introduce in the House, fundamentally to give ourselves a lot greater powers of how to deal with this. But what I can tell you is, in the end, when push comes to a shove, there is very little you can do when these boats turn up in the waters.
Presumably, if we sent people to Australia, though, we'd have to pay for that.
Yeah, but then these people would be landing on New Zealand shores. So you go back and say, okay, at the end of all of this deal, in 2014 or 2015 or 2016, New Zealand was going to receive 750 refugees. That number's the same. But by changing the mix of where we might take them, we've given ourselves much greater links into the intelligence that, and ongoing support of those intelligence links in on the ground that Australia pay for. We've given ourselves an assurance that the Australians won't be looking to shepherd people across the Tasman, and we've given ourselves the chance, if we want to use potentially offshore processing centres. So I reckon that's a pretty good deal.
What when did Australia say to you that they would shepherding a boat across the Tasman?
Well, there's a long-standing history of a boat that was looking to come, and that was potentially one of the options. Again, if people say, I will not get off the boat, in the end, you can't force them off the boat. If they say, I am going to go out there and sail across the Tasman, they can do that. But then, a first world country has to think about what that might mean if with all of that knowledge that is happening before their eyes. And one option is, do you give them support? Now, I just think we have a much better position now. We're part of a regional solution.
Were they threatening to withdraw support or intelligence in any way?
No, they certainly weren't trying to heavy us in any way, shape or form. I have been of the view that this is an issue that we need to deal with, and I've been very strongly of the view that changing the mix of where we take people is a pretty small price to pay, because there is no price, because in the end we're going to take 750 people. But what you can be sure of is we're likely to continue to get that very high level of information. And again, I can't publicly release a lot of information even under the IIA for obvious reasons, but what I can tell you is that I get more than enough correspondence from my intelligence agencies fed from the Australian intelligence agencies to tell you that this situation and the likelihood of a boat wanting to come to New Zealand is very real and very alive, and I was dealing with it just before I went on my Christmas holidays.
But as you've just said, doesn't New Zealand already get a high level of information? So what's the difference going to be in terms of what we get as a quid pro quo?
Continued support. So in the end, if we just wash our hands of it and say, look, Australia, it's totally your problem, you deal with all the people and you take them all, then okay, but we can do that, and they'll probably continue to support us because it's a great relationship between New Zealand and Australia. But there's lots of areas where we try and work together and where we take a regional approach. When it came to Ramsey, it was a regional approach. When it comes to rolling out education support in the Pacific, it's a regional approach. So there are lots of things we work on them together.
But if there was no suggestion from the Australians that they would withdraw that support, and we're not actually getting a higher level of support, then how is that an advantage to New Zealand?
Because in the end, I think we've got to pull our weight, and I don't think it comes at a price to New Zealand, so why wouldn't we do it?
Can you tell us more about what you're doing at Mangere
and what kind of money? I don't know if we publicly in this. I know the number and I know the debt. It's a pretty major overhaul of the facility.
You said when you introduced the
immigration
amendment bill, you said that you weren't planning to build a detention centre in New Zealand.
Well, we're not. We've got Mangere and we're going to revamp it.
But are you expanding it?
No, just upgrading it. It's just old and tired and it needs work.
Well, Mr. When you say you were dealing with this just before Christmas about the possibility of the boat coming here, did you have some indication that one was on its way?
Yes.
How big was that?
Well, it came again, sourced by the Australian system, and they, as I understand it, either it fell over or they at least had enough information to ensure that it didn't take place. But all I'm telling you is this stuff is real. I deal with it all the time. And at some point, someone's going to get a boat that's going to turn up. Now, even this deal doesn't fix that, but it's a hard place to get to. It's a long way away, but so was Canada.
Okay.
Yeah, because Julia Gillard at the weekend, she did make mention about how hard it would be to get here. She didn't seem to be as certain as you are now that someone could get here.
Well, I remember the Canadians saying they didn't think a boat would turn up. I mean, look, in the end, the vast bulk of the boats that turn up in the Australian system are small craft that would really struggle to get to New Zealand. That's a statement of fact. But as every year has gone by, the people smugglers have got more sophisticated, the boats have become larger.
So was this boat before Christmas on the route to New Zealand?
That was the plan, as we understood.
What happened?
I don't know the details of why it fell over, but the deal was in trouble.
Lots.
Was
it intercepted by the Australians or something?
The information was, yeah.
Have they intercepted this boat on
the way? Well, the information that was going to take place, yeah.
When you say lots, what time?
Hundreds.
So where did the boat end up?
Don't know whether it actually happened. And that's part of what we deal with. There are endless sort of plans that are hatched and information we get and things that we do. But our first and best form of defence is dealing with it on the ground in these countries, which are the embarkation point for the boats. And that's where Australia has a lot of resources and a lot of energy, and it's really useful for New Zealand to tap into that.
So this is intelligence rather than interception?
Correct, yeah, intelligence.
When you said the deal fell over, saying that it didn't actually leave, that there was...
Well, I don't need any further advice that it's on its way. Someone assumes it hasn't got off the ground or hasn't gone.
Did you know where it was coming from?
Yeah.
Indonesia?
They're a pretty good guess, yeah.
So who needs that measure?
They're a pretty good guess.
Choose the 150.
Yeah. Well, in so much that we can pick and choose, in so much that they have to be genuine refugees. So this argument that somehow we might not get a genuine refugee, that doesn't fit.
Once you've actually, you have a pool of several thousand approved refugees.
Yeah.
Are you then going to pick and choose?
No, I think we'll be happy. We'll be happy as long as they fit the criteria of being a genuine refugee.
So if United Nations or any other international organisations, any feedback or concern about the change and where we'll be taking the next?
We've been taking them through our thought process and what we intended to do long before we announced what we did in the weekend. In the end, you know, they understand we have our sovereign right to choose where we take refugees from.
So they weren't very happy?
Well, I wouldn't put them in those terms. I'd just say that they understand, you know, what we're trying to do with it. We're maintaining the number of refugees we take, but instead of taking them from, you know, Asia or in Africa, or take a small grouping from Australia.
I noticed the absence of the long-term project of mutual recognition of tax credits. Have we given up on that one?
No. There's something in the communique, I'm pretty sure, that says there's ongoing work from the officials. I mean, I think what's fair to say is we push harder on that one than the Australians do. The fiscal implications for the Australian Treasury are much greater than ours. There's a bit of debate within each system about the absolute accuracy of whether it would be a self-funding, as I think the Productivity Commission argue, or the work that was done by NZIER, I think. But look, New Zealand's view is if you really want to have a totally integrated Australasian market, then we've done that when it comes to trade, pretty much. We need to do it in terms of capital markets, and a really important part of that is imputation, streaming of imputation credits.
What hope have you got of getting further immigration legislation through, to get the Australians to agree to the processing? Because you haven't got the immigration amendment bill through yet.
Well, that's subject to New Zealand passing it, so it's got nothing to do with the Australians. But in terms of if we wanted to change the legislation to use offshore processing, obviously it depends on where we'd want to send those people. So if it was PNG and Nauru or whatever, you'd have to go and talk to those particular countries. But, you know, in the end, we could potentially do that, yes.
But would you have the numbers in the New Zealand Parliament to change the legislation?
That I don't know.
Well, wouldn't you check that first? That's part of
the
step to make.
No, because we're not planning to make that step today. We're just buying ourselves an option to do it if we want to.
And did you consider when you took the 150 actually just adding it on to the existing 750 quota instead of incorporating it
in it? No. I think we're comfortable that 750 is about the right setting for New Zealand. We put a lot of resources into refugees that come into New Zealand. So I think it's about making sure we give them as good experience as we can. There's obviously family reunification that sits on top of that, so the actual physical number is always more. And it's really important that we can provide them the best support we can around housing and social services and the likes. And so I think that number's about right for New Zealand at the moment.
Do you see the potential risk in the political risk in buying into Australia's detention model?
No, I don't think so.
But don't you see it as a detention model, the way they're handling refugees?
No.
Will there be any sort of secure area in the revamp
Well, I can't tell you the exact answer to that. I mean, I don't think so. That's not the plan of what we're doing at Mangere at the moment. What we're doing at the moment is a revamp of the existing facilities.
So at the moment, if there was a mass arrival, you would detain them somewhere like an army camp?
Well, there's a number of options, but Mangere is obviously the primary option, depending on whether it had people in it or not. But it depends how big it was, but yes, you know, an army facility technically, but that couldn't be forever, could it?
And you haven't got the legislation to actually do that yet? I mean, is that legislation actually going to pass?
Well, I think so. I mean, we won't introduce it unless we can get the numbers for it, but there's quite a pretty strong case, I think, for making the changes that we're proposing, and in the fullness of time, we'll work that through with other partners that might support us.
Well, can you report it back in office and things been ready to debate?
Yeah, I know, but we've also had a lot of things that have been pressing. I mean, we ran out of time virtually to get the alcohol law reform bill passed before Christmas. So it's all about what we think is the number one priority.
So will you try and get this measure of Australian processing attached to the bill at the moment?
I don't think so. I mean, my view would be we've bought some optionality there, so the chance to do it if we want to. But I think my view would be we'd carry on with where we're going in the current bill, which is basically just giving ourselves better rights and sending some deterrent messages, which was the aim of that legislation.
How important is the Navy in this disruption and prevention, and how concerned are you by the recent report that Australian sailors are needed for our frigate to sail?
Well, ultimately, if there was a mass arrival, then the Navy clearly would have to play a part. Am I concerned? I mean, in the end of the day, sometimes there are skill shortages and there's exchanges across the Tasman to fill those.
You said that you're not planning at this stage to use the legislation to use the detention centres.
Yeah.
What events or what will change your mind on that?
Well, I think we start seeing lots of boats.
So you'll do it after an arrival rather than try and see if there's support for it?
No, I think the legislation will probably pass at some point, hopefully prior to an arrival.
This is the
current legislation that's on the books. But any other amendment, we could probably do it at a later time, I would have thought.
On another issue,
I would have thought so. We thought it was major.
On another issue, Prime Minister, the West Papuan campaigner Benny Linda has been blocked from coming to Parliament by the Speaker.
Right. Don't have any details. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a West Papuan sort of campaigner.
Yeah.
The Greens wanted the Speaker here in the foyer.
Yeah.
For some reason, the Speaker has blocked them. Do you know why?
You'd have to ask them. It's probably about the way that we perceive Indonesian rights and how we treat Indonesia and under what terms he's coming, but we'd need to ask the Speaker.
He's been to parliaments in other parts of the world, etc., etc., UN, British Parliament. He's even met David Cameron.
I honestly don't have any details. It hasn't been raised with me, so you need to go and state the card.
What is the government's stance on this?
Well, we believe in Indonesia's totality of Indonesia's rights and their recognition of their territory in that area.
Would your government support a living wage? There's a campaign that's going to kick off later on in the week, encouraging companies to adopt the sort of $18-$19 an hour wage.
Well, what companies or council organisations choose to do in terms of paying their staff is a matter for them. So the only area where the government plays a role is in the setting of the minimum wage. And if you ask me whether we intend to raise the minimum wage to $18 now, then the answer is no, not in the next 12 months. And I think there's always got to be a balance there between, obviously, people's need to pay their bills and meet their liabilities, but the counter of that, of course, is making sure they remain employed or get employment. And that's the balancing act we're constantly trying to manage. And if you think about what's been happening in the economy at the moment, labour markets haven't been that strong. You've got a situation where inflation's low, running about 0.8%. So, I think in the end, companies that they can pay more, you know, obviously you encourage them to pay more, but I'm not sure it's as simple as saying this is a magical number and we'll meet it.
Would you endorse the campaign though to set voluntary levels to encourage those companies to get up to that level if that's seen as a wage by which people could live more comfortably?
Well, I think it's very subjective. And so it varies on circumstances, like the minimum wage. I mean, some people on the minimum wage have it as a starting out point, and you know, it's a very important stepping stone to where they go. For others, it's more their long-term pay because of the nature of the job they're doing. So I don't think we'll be running any advocacy campaign up to employers what that's used to pay.
On the Hobbit opinion that the office released last week, it's clear that the studios are sort of saying or warning that they have second thoughts of some of those documents that are released. How much of a worry is that to you?
I'm not concerned by that. I don't think that's likely.
You didn't feel that they have been essentially bullying the government into keeping the information secret for their own?
No, I think the information that was contained in those statements was quite historic from memory. I think it's about a year old. I'm saying it's wrong. I'm just saying they made those comments quite a long time ago. Look, from the government's point of view, we're pretty comfortable, I've got to say, about releasing the information. We've seen the determination from the Ombudsman. The Minister's been working with the other parties involved. We understand sensitivities that other parties sometimes have when it comes to commercial dealings with the government, but we think it's highly likely that both the government and all other parties will be complying with the ruling from the Ombudsman.
Is that why, though, the government is now looking at changing the Official Information Act to strengthen protections around commercial confidentiality and third parties?
No, it's not specific to the Hobbit. That came out of, the Law Commission recommendations. I mean, look, the only thing I'd say is the government is sometimes in a position where it procures equipment or services, and those commercial negotiations can be sensitive in the same way they are between companies in the free market, if you like. So, in that instance, when a company deals with the government, I think they are entitled to know if they do so on a commercially sensitive basis, that remains confidential. Now, anyone who deals with the government also needs to understand that we're subject to the Official Information Act, and it just depends on where that sits. Sometimes the Ombudsman agrees to withhold that, sometimes they don't. Generally they do if it's commercially sensitive.
What was the nature of that information? I think, remember you said it wasn't commercially sensitive in other comments you made elsewhere. Is that right?
Well, I don't think it is. I personally don't think it is hugely commercially sensitive.
If you are comfortable about releasing it now, why didn't you release it after the first request?
Because we've been working with the other parties. It's not really anything. To be blunt, having read it all and read it all again, I don't think there's anything that's going to embarrass the government or necessarily other parties, actually.
So it was out of respect for the other parties that
held it back. Plain packaging on tobacco, I understand it's gone back to Cabinet. Where are you at with the decision on that?
Look, the paper has to come back to Cabinet. It was due to come back last week, and Tariana couldn't make the Cabinet meeting. And so when she has an opportunity to be at Cabinet, then we'll discuss the next steps for that, but it makes sense in the Minister's
there. Just considering the anger outside in the North, does the government have any advice about whether or not perhaps support should be offered?
On the drought?
Yes.
Look, Nathan Guy may have had the advice in terms of the Minister for Primary Industries. I haven't received any advice on that yet.
Did Cabinet consider the 4G spectrum allocation and compensation providing today?
Look, I had a very brief discussion, but there was no paper.